actually, there are times and phases when that's just where we are, isn't it? And we actually don't know. I suppose, you know, if we're lucky, we've got a positive, enough positive momentum to keep us moving anyway through that kind of more fallow kind of period, or barren, actually, sometimes. And you know, and we keep practicing anyway, even when actually we don't know. So, leave that there. I've probably got a good range of responses to it, and and again, it's like there's aspects to this that are fall into the same thing. Some of it, it's like it's just moving away from something. And other things, that curiosity and the awareness of the benefits received, wanting to know more, are more moving towards something. So it's the both of them have got the same thing in them. Part of them is what we're leaving behind, and part of it is what we hope to move towards. So I think this sort of exercise is good to do, especially in this sort of situation if we want to launch ourselves into a lot of meditation. And it goes back to the poem, like, okay, we know what we've studied. We know what you've studied. What have you seen? Actually, what have you seen so deeply that, well, it would keep you going. But when away, on a more conscious level, you maybe just can't quite put words to it, or you don't know, or there's doubts come up. So we know what you've studied, but what have you seen? What have you got so deeply embedded that it will keep you, it will kind of keep going? Or to put it, so that's from the Kenneth White poem, to put it from in terms of the other poem, you know, when the new expanded vision becomes frightening, you know, do we answer the knock at the door? We hear the knock at the door, but do we answer it? You know, or do we pretend that we're not there? Take the phone off the hook. Because who knows what an angel may ask of us? So, let's leave that aside for a minute, carry on. So just going back to the beginning of the Buddha's quest. So, you know, we've been saying we're focusing on Shakyamuni, the man, these couple of days. The beginning of his quest started with those particular three experiences, whether it happened in once or whether it happened over a period of time. In a way, it doesn't matter, but the three big experiences that he had as a young man of aging, illness, and death. So I just want to introduce a couple of terms to us. Oops, got a trailer there. Samvega and Pasada. So, thinking back to the story about his encounters with aging, illness, death, and of course there was also the foresight, and he saw them and was terrified by them. He didn't see them and go, yeah, that's right, age, that's what happens, get old, and then carry on living amidst the intoxication of youth. Actually, if you're a youth, it's fair enough to be intoxicated by it. You know, it's not like it's kind of it's off. You see it, and you probably, those of you who've got kids, probably see it in the man. Do I see it in my daughter? It's fair enough. She's 25. You know, you ought to be intoxicated by youth, maybe at that time. But actually, the Buddha saw these things, didn't carry on in that intoxication of youth and power. I mean, you know, he had power at his fingertips in terms of temporal, you know, power. I mean, he could have just swept by him all these and didn't actually experience them with absolute terror. Could not stay where he was with that experience now. Of course, people tried to talk him out. In some of the stories, his father in particular tried to talk him out of it. But it does seem that, you know, Siddhartha realised if he gave in to that advice, well meant though it was, he'd be betraying his heart. He'd even be betraying that terror that he'd felt by making it a small thing, when actually it was one of the terrible angels, really, you know. So he didn't stay where he was, of course he left. And that experience of those three things, aging, illness and death, is given the name Samvega, and it seems as if we don't really have a word for it. And so what I've quoted up there is, it's from an essay by, a Westerner, but ordained in Theravadan tradition, called Tanisaro. And he describes Samvega. He says it's a complex set of emotions. There's three sets of feelings that all happen simultaneously. So the first, in a way, they don't come first, second, and third, but there's Samvega involves a sense of shock, profound, disturbing sense of shock, dismay, even sort of separation. That comes upon us upon realizing the futility of life as normally lived. So with the Buddha, it was seeing old age, illness and death, the inevitability of those, that shocked him and let him see that futility of life as normally lived. So that's a strong statement. So first sort of swirl of feeling comes from this sense of shock, dismay and even separation from. And underneath that is a sense of realization of futility of life as normally lived. Along with that comes a chastening sense of our own foolishness and complacency in having lived blindly like that. Do you know the word chastening? I was trying to think what might be good just to look it up in the dictionary, but it's something, I was sort of thinking, oh, it's the sort of feeling that you have, you know, maybe you're just beginning, there's something that actually you need to confess, and there's a feeling of being chastened in it. It's to do with pride, it's to do with sort of ego and pride, it is remorse, and you're just feeling and feeling a bit humbled, but there is pride, there's a sense that your pride's taking a knock as well, so it'd be good to look it up, but it's quite an emotive word in English. So chastening sense of our own foolishness and complacency in having lived blindly, i.e. like this. And then the third set of feeling is a sense of urgency to find a way out of the cycle of futility. Find a way out of that. So that's the first thing I want to draw our attention to. The second one, which is associated more with the Buddha's response to the fourth sight. So he saw the wandering forest contemplative who looked happy, but didn't look like his happiness had come about by ignoring illness, old age and death. So the feeling then that arose in the Buddha is described as pasada, and it's usually translated as clarity and serene confidence. It's what stops Samvega from turning into despair, because, to be honest, there is that possibility, there is that potential in there. And in this essay that I'm quoting from, Tanisaro says he thinks that Buddhism is the only religion he can think of that actually encourages this emotion of realising the futility, of that sort of futility, that shock, complacency, you know, urgency to get out of it. How he puts it is that it's remarkable that Buddhism actually encourages that and has the confidence to say, you can hold this. You need to have this experience, but you can hold it, and there's a counter to it, there's an antidote to it. Actually, there's a way out of it, that's the main thing, but actually in between that, there's a confidence, a serenity that enables you to hold this, but without letting it turn into despair. And so that's quite something, that's when you think about it. And I looked up, I just did a search through the seminar CD from Bhante about Pasada, and he says, it was interesting given what Pam said. Pasada as a noun means clear, bright and pure. It especially refers to colours. Clear, bright and pure colours. So as a noun it means clarity, brightness, purity, particularly of colours. It's even used for your complexion, of your expression, that is clear and bright and pure. And then it's reused with regard to the mental state that expresses itself in that sort of complexion. It expresses a certain inner contentment and satisfaction and faith, as it were. Faith in the good, faith in the acceptance of the good. So it's a very glad, with regard to the Buddha, Pasada with regard to the Buddha, it's a very glad acquiescence in the positive qualities of the Buddha, or happy acquiescence in recognizing someone else's positive qualities. And he links it with metta and shubha. He thinks they're quite similar in feeling and tone. They're quite subtle and quite delicate. So Pasada, often translated as faith in the Buddha, but it's a very delicate, subtle, intense gladness and delight with which you contemplate and acquiesce in all the good, positive, spiritual qualities of the Buddha, and you rejoice in them. Not in the sense of throwing your hat up in the air, it's much more subtle than that, but you feel a really keen delight and satisfaction. So that's Pasada. And I'm introducing at this moment because coming from yesterday and those three kind of approaches to working with ourselves in meditation, and at the core of them is faith. So it's just a bit of helping to unpack how we might see that faith. And you need both to have faith and to act on it. You need both the Samvega experience and the Pasada experience. In a way, they kind of feed into one another. They mutually benefit one another, mutually reinforce one another, I think. And when I was thinking about this more, I thought, well, put faith in the middle and then just try and unpack that a little bit into something that's we could work with a bit more precisely. We could think about that in terms of Samvega and Pasada. And then beyond that, again, there's the mutual reinforcing of spiritual death and spiritual rebirth. Because Samvega is obviously associated quite a lot with the spiritual death aspect of this. The sense of the shock and the dismay and what you have to get beyond. And in a way, not just what you've studied, but what you've seen. That you can't not see any longer. You just can't close your eyes to it any longer. It's that sort of experience. Whereas, and Pasada counters that and supports it by giving the clarity and serenity in the face of that, and confidence, serenity in the face of that.